And I think the whole idea of the Epstein files is kind of like gaslighting, because what even is, we don't care about that, like the file. What are the files? We want the hard drive.
Right. Well, you know, to paraphrase Bill Clinton, it depends on what the definition of a file is, right. You know?
Right, exactly. Like, what is it? Like, this is this some concocted file somebody in some back office at Langley, you know, put together with a couple of names in the black book? Right. Because the black book's been available for how many years now? Like, we can see all the addresses in there.
The black book went to auction recently.
Oh, really?
There's an auction house on Maryland's Eastern Shore called Alexander Auctions. They specialize mostly in World War II and even then mostly Nazi stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But they also deal in Americana, like, you know, paintings by Charles Manson, for example. Stuff like that. Yeah, it's cool stuff. They tried to auction the Black Book recently. The estimate was $75,000 to $100,000, and it didn't sell. So the book is out there. Why then does the FBI not have a copy and then release the copy? If we know who was in the Black Book, why haven't they told us? To me, that would be part of a file. It would be part of a record. What you're talking about is even more important. Virginia Giuffre, who recently committed suicide, but who very bravely testified against Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell.
Are we talking about the lady who got hit by the truck?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, she killed herself a couple of weeks after that. She testified that there was a room at Epstein's mansion in the Caribbean where from the floor to the ceiling, it was just monitors.
Right.
And there were guys in there monitoring the monitors. Every room in the house and every bathroom in the house was wired for video. So where are the videos? Why have we not seen anything? Why have we heard nothing about Prince Andrew or mm-hmm. about Bill Gates or Bill Clinton or Alan Dershowitz mm-hmm. or any of the other, you know, A-list people
yep.
who we know for a fact were at that house?
Yeah, this whole, it's like the JFK conspiracy mm-hmm. where everybody knows. If you pull every American in this country who's paying, you know, even a little bit of attention, they all know that this was some sort of conspiracy coup,
right?
You know, Oswald wasn't the only shooter, but the government just like says, shut up, mm-hmm. talk all you want, make your podcasts and your documentaries, but nothing, you're never going to find out the truth.
That's
it's
right.
Almost the same thing here where they're just holding it back, and they know everybody knows,
right?
Everybody knows Jeffrey Epstein was working on the behalf of Israel intelligence. They know, I mean, just the fact that Uhud Barak was at his apartment and working in his office all the time, was his handler.
Yeah.
All the stuff with, you know, even right. with Robert Maxwell and right. Ghislaine Maxwell.
Right.
Like it's so obvious in plain sight. My question is, why can't Trump admit that?
I don't know. I was on another podcast yesterday and, Patrick.
Yeah, PBD.
Yeah. And he said that that this is the first real scandal in this second Trump administration. He said that the White House completely misread public opinion on this issue, that people not just believed him when he said he was going to release everything, they expected that it would all be released so that we could get to the bottom of this for once. And then you've got, I mean, you saw that press conference with Kash Patel and Dan Bongino. I felt pain for them. You could see it in their faces. Like neither one of them wanted to say he killed himself and right. we didn't find anything.
Meanwhile, these are the guys who've been on podcasts for yeah. the last 2 years.
Exactly.
Pounding the table that Bill Gates is lobbying Congress to,
right.
to squash the Epstein files. We got to get this out to expose all these leftist, blood-sucking Democrats.
Right.
Second they get into power, it's like
everything changes.
They go into a dark room. They come out. Mm-hmm. Epstein killed himself. Mm-hmm. Gone. It's complete...
Insanity. You and I have talked about this in the past. I always believed that Epstein killed himself only because of my own experience in prison, and I can lay that out. But the only thing that gives me pause is that Dr. Michael Bodden, who is one of the foremost mm-hmm. Forensic coroners in the world, said that his hyoid bone was fractured,
right.
which was indicative of... Mm-hmm. A strangulation of, yep. a homicide is what he specifically said.
Mm-hmm.
A homicide. Now, he may be wrong. There are lots of different ways to break your hyoid bone. It's very fragile. He could have broken it when he was, you know, strangling himself with the sheet. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But for Dr. Baden to come out like definitively and say, I believe this was a homicide, it gives me pause.
There's a lot of other things in there too besides that that, sure. that are very fishy. You know, like the noose.
All parts of it are fishy.
Yeah. Like the, so the thing about the hyoid bone is there was some sort of statistic that was looked at in medical research where they looked at people that were hung or died by hanging, like a legitimate hanging where your feet can't touch the ground, right? Where there's actual like trauma.
Yeah.
And you know, out of, I think 25% of those hangings that they looked at, the autopsies, 25%, 1 to 2 of those bones around the hyoid bone were broken.
Mm-hmm.
Epstein, all 3 were broken. And he was in a little cell.
Yeah, with no real height
right.
to jump from.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how high up the top bunk on a bunk bed?
Mm-hmm.
That's not high enough to, you know, do a Barzan Tikriti.
Right, right.
You know, where his head popped off.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, his brother Mark Epstein has pointed out a lot mm-hmm. of other weird things, like the noose. They said that it was cut. Like the actual photos they took and the descriptions they gave do not match up at all. They said the noose was cut. They had to cut it with scissors or whatever. But when you look at the photo, it was actually a hemmed seam.
What?
Yeah, all kinds of very, very odd things that just don't add up whatsoever. And the photo they released of his jail cell.
Yeah.
Right after it happened was not the photo, not the image of the security footage.
No.
Completely 2 different cells.
Yes. In fact, I saw yesterday that there were 12 people in the cell after he died, 12 people in the cell who had nothing to do with the case. They just went for, you know, take a picture with their phone or hang out or check it out, or where they could totally contaminated the scene.
Mm.
Plus another thing. And granted, MDC Brooklyn is a maximum security penitentiary, and I was in a low security prison. But if a prisoner in my prison was suicidal, which happens every once in a while, what they do is they put him in a cubicle where 3 of the walls are just glass. Okay. They take all your clothes, so you're naked, and they just give you this paper smock to put over yourself. And they hire other prisoners. They give you $5 for a 4-hour shift, and you just sit in a chair in front of one of those, you know, glass walls, just staring at the guy. And if he tries to kill himself in there, you run and get a guard.
Mm.
So what they did with Epstein was they put him in a cell with, you know, another prisoner to watch him, but the prisoner was in on multiple murder counts. He was a serial killer. Why in the world would you put him in with a serial killer?
Right.
Why don't you put him in with, you know, the trustee?
Mm.
Or better yet, take him to medical, which is where they take suicidal prisoners in other prisons. Take him to medical and just have him sit in medical.
Right.
They knew he was suicidal. He said he was suicidal.
And they took him off suicide watch 2 days before he died.
Exactly. Why? Whose decision was that?
Mm.
There, you know, in my mind, there are so many different people who could be prosecuted for a whole bunch of different roles in this death, whether he killed himself or somebody killed him. There are so many people, beginning with whoever was monitoring those monitors at the house, whoever was serving drinks and saw girls, underage girls being, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that word on YouTube.
Yeah, you can say it, it's fine.
Okay, SA'd. When Pam Bondi came out the other day and said that there will be no arrests beyond what? Ghislaine Maxwell is the only guilty person here?
Right.
It was just the two of them. They were super people. And they did all of this on their own. There was nobody else behind them.
Mm-hmm.
And then nobody wants to talk about Israel, as you said.
Right.
Nobody wants to have that conversation.
Another thing about Trump is, like, he's not an idiot. He has the temperature on culture.
He really does.
And he can really read the room on every single topic and see where the consensus is in the public online.
And he's wrong on this issue.
On this one, it's like he's Helen Keller.
Yeah.
It's like he doesn't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. So what the hell is that? It's so bizarre.
Yeah.
You know, that combined with the fact like he doesn't seem like the kind of guy who would just be like caving to every demand of a foreign leader to support their war. I mean, especially when he campaigned on ending all the wars.
And he is.
And he's literally doing everything this guy is telling him to do.
Yeah.
Which is his MO
at all. See, that makes me think.
Me too.
That Patel and Bongino went to him and said, "Mr. President, we found some fucked up stuff. And it's not what we thought we were going to find. It's this." And he says, "We should probably try to kill this." That's the only conclusion I can draw.
But here's my thing, though. If Epstein was an Israeli access agent and he had, obviously we know, he had every single room wired with hundreds of cameras and he has obviously multiple hard drives with lots of video footage on it.
Right.
That is a thermonuclear weapon.
Absolutely.
For whoever, I would assume, Israel.
Absolutely right.
Right? Mm-hmm. So if you let that information leak out to the CIA, your weapon is worthless.
Yeah.
So how do you think Bongino and Kash Patel would be able to see and know what they have? How would they have access to this stuff?
Well, I mean, in a perfect world, the FBI would have access to all of it. Now, yeah, you and I know that that's not the case.
Uh-huh.
But I think I would expect that they would have access to significant portions of it at least.
Hmm.
And then getting back to Trump's.
How?
Well, just because the federal government has been working this case for so long. Remember, Epstein's first conviction was in 2006.
Right.
So, I mean, there've got to be volumes of files on him. Volumes of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they're starting from scratch. They've known for a long time who Jeffrey Epstein was and what he was doing.
Right. There's probably endless amounts of footage and evidence that probably
and
implicates a lot of people.
To those tapes?
But I bet you like 1% of that with like the Bill Gates and Donald Trumps of the world.
Right.
Those ones are locked away in a vault.
You know what? There was a guy who was very, very close to President Reagan. His name was Bloomingdale. He was the founder of Bloomingdale's department stores.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy was a billionaire and he was a member of what used to be called Reagan's kitchen cabinet. So it was all these multimillionaires and billionaires, old white men. They were all friends with Reagan going back to the 40s, right? So when he would return to California, they would always get together and at the ranch and they would play golf and they would talk about the issues and he would take advice from them. So Bloomingdale was banging his girlfriend and he had a heart attack and he died on top of her. Okay. And somebody leaked the story to the press. And so Reagan's knee-jerk reaction was to say, "Yeah, you know, I didn't really know him very well. I met him a few times." And then people are like, "Come on, man. He was your best friend. You've known him for 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so somebody inside the White House got to Reagan and said, "Come on." So he came out and he made a completely different statement. And he said, "He was my best friend. I liked him and trusted him.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that things worked out the way that they did. That's between him and his God." It's like, okay, now doesn't it feel better to tell the truth?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. If you have nothing to hide, you didn't do anything.
Right.
Just come out with the truth. That's how I feel about this Epstein case. Why are they still hiding it? If Kash Patel and Dan Bongino and Pam Bondi and Donald Trump are not involved, just come out with it. What do they have to lose? They have a lot to gain.
There's a hard drive sitting in Tel Aviv right now.
There has to be. There has to be. That has to be it. That's the only thing I can come up with.
Right. This is the most obvious thing, yeah. Right? If we want to obey Occam's razor.
Exactly.
It's the most obvious thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when it comes to what was I gonna say? God damn it. When Trump is like blatantly coming out and, you know, and just dismissing this stuff like this, and like every single other person, like they obviously can't get on the same page. Mm-hmm. It's lazy, you know, like the cover up is very, very lazy.
Yes.
If there is a cover up, and it's not thought out. And especially when you have Elon going nuclear like this on everything, like he just said, Steve Bannon was in it.
Yeah.
And we know Steve Bannon, the day Trump fired him, drove to Epstein's house in New York and did that interview with him.
Yeah, right.
Which is allegedly hours long. The footage has been released of it, mm-hmm. where like Epstein basically said Trump was my best friend for 2 years. Mm-hmm. You know, talked a lot, said a lot of crazy details that came out, which was like a 2 minutes or 5 minutes or something like that. But we know Bannon's been really close to him and has a bunch of footage of him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yeah, it's just a messy, entangled web. And there are lots and lots. It seems like whatever it is, it's got to be like the Rosetta Stone to basically kneecap every single powerful person in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. I would have to agree. Except for Dershowitz, because remember, he kept his underwear on. At least he told us that he kept his underwear on as the 16-year-old was massaging his 86-year-old body.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, and the other funny thing about this is one of the victims, the first two victims, the two sisters, it was Maria Farmer and I think Annie Farmer.
Yeah.
Were some of the first two. Right. They were ignored when they talked about
when
they gave their stories in the very beginning before Epstein died. And they came out and they were explaining, you know, how, you know, Maria Farmer, she worked the front desk at his Manhattan office. Uh-huh. And she talked about Bill Clinton and, you know, all of the right wing Clinton haters were like, thank you, Maria Farmer, for coming out and exposing this Bill Clinton stuff. And she was like, you guys are living in La La Land.
Yeah, you don't get it.
She's like, you don't understand. Trump was here 3 days a week. Uh-huh. And she's taught, and there was an interview where she was on video saying, talking about the day that Epstein brought Trump in for the first time, and he was like looking her up and down, like, and then Epstein goes to her, says to Trump, "She's not for you." Like they want to ignore that, right? Like everybody was a part of this, and it's like, it is, it's mutually assured destruction.
Yeah.
If it gets out,
an awful system we have,
and it is, it's fucking disgusting. And, you know,
but I will never, ever accept that there is not one single person worthy of an indictment besides Ghislaine Maxwell. It's just not possible.
Is there any chance that the CIA and the Mossad work together on things and share intelligence?
Not on an issue that includes American citizens, or more specifically, what are called U.S. persons, okay. American citizens, or anybody in the United States on a green card.
So how would you imagine if the CIA was involved in Epstein and he was a Mossad access agent, what would be the CIA's involvement?
The CIA's interest would be in doubling him back, but the CIA doesn't spy on Israel.
Do you think it's possible the CIA does not spy on Israel?
No, sir. Not since Richard Nixon was president.
Okay.
Forbidden. Seriously.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So do you think it's possible that CIA caught wind of what Epstein was doing and what the Mossad was using him for and said, hey, motherfucker, we see what you're doing. You got to pay your tax to us, to Epstein, and made him be like, you got to give us whatever it is, 1%.
Possible.
Of this information that you're giving to Mossad.
Possible, but not likely, because what they would have had to do, this would have been a turf battle, like to end all turf battles. You know how the CIA and the FBI are with mm-hmm. each other.
Yeah.
So the CIA would have had to go to the FBI, and the FBI would have made that approach, because not only are you dealing with American citizens, you're dealing with American citizens who, for the most part, are doing these things on American soil.
Right.
Yeah. So the CIA certainly, you know, it would have come to their attention, sure. but they would have had to go immediately to the FBI.
So when the CIA and the Mossad worked together, they worked together in foreign countries on foreign operations.
Exactly.
Like something with Iran or something like that.
Exactly right.
But in a case like Epstein or anything to do with America, American institutions or American people, there would be no chance.
Zero.
What is the like, what is the overall sentiment at the CIA of the Mossad?
There is great and deep respect for the Mossad's operational abilities. And that was enhanced greatly by this pager and cell phone operation against Hezbollah.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to talk about that if we have a minute. Otherwise, we've never gotten along with Mossad.
Over the years, like going back to when you started.
Not close at all. Not close at all.
Why don't you get along?
Because they're constantly trying to recruit us, to spy on us, to plant bugs in our headquarters. They harass our officers, like as a matter of policy. And then, you know, the chief has to go in and say, stop harassing my officers. You know that they're not working against you. They're working with you and you still harass them. And then they say, okay. And they back off for a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start up again. You know, somebody shot out the ambassador's tires once.
Right.
And, you know, some very helpful fellows happened to pull right up and to help them, you know, change the tire.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the ambassador and the driver got back in the car to continue on, he realized his briefcase was missing. Oh, my God. How could that happen? Stuff like that.
Mm.
Like, is that really necessary?
That's basically the picture that's been painted to me by not just you, but by other people that I've talked to, like former intelligence community folks.
It's
the same thing. It seems like more of a like fed up, annoyed, just like they're kind of a nuisance to us.
Yes.
Because they are so effective and they are so persistent. And
oh my God, they're so effective. And they're effective because they can't lose. If they lose, they die.
Right.
Right? Like this thing, I'll tell you kind of something funny. The day after the pager operation, where they essentially decapitated Hezbollah. Right now, Hezbollah doesn't exist as what it was. It's going to come back, of course. Yeah. But right now, there is no Hezbollah. So the day after, I got a call from a Russian news channel. And they said, would you come on and talk about this operation? I said, sure. And they said, so this is a war crime, right? And I said, well, yeah, technically, because, you know, we know of several cases where the guy that had the pager took the pager off his belt, put it on the table, sat down with his family to have dinner. The pager blew up and killed the 9-year-old daughter, right? Mm-hmm. So technically, yeah, that's a war crime. So yeah, can you say that? Can you say it's a war crime? And I said, well, no, I think the point is that this is probably one of the most brilliant acts of genius operational planning I've ever seen in my life.
Right.
Imagine the moving parts involved in an operation like this, where you have to control everything from manufacturing.
Right. They had to start a shell company in some other country,
yeah,
right?
In multiple countries, Hungary, Taiwan. Not only do you have to manage manufacturing, you have to manage the entire supply chain, intercept these things at some point, pack them full of C4, but not too much because they need to still work as pagers, and then put them back into the supply chain again. And then once they arrive in Lebanon, make sure they get to your targets.
And wasn't it like something around 10 years from the time they sold them to Hezbollah?
Yes.
From the time they actually deployed the bomb?
6 generations old.
Crazy.
Yeah. But Hezbollah didn't have the money for, you know, the new stuff. So they said, well, you know, we can get thousands of these.
I remember watching this incredible, I think it was a 60 Minutes thing I saw on this, but they created like full on advertising campaigns, commercials, beautiful websites. They had salespeople
incredible.
That were showing and displaying all this stuff to these people. And they literally created a whole fake company marketing campaign that was totally believable to these people. And I think in that, I mean, I don't know how accurate or how real 60 Minutes is. I mean, I'm sure it's pretty produced to some point, but they had a Mossad agent that was like under a behind a shadow, under a mask. They changed his voice or whatever. And he was saying to this 60 Minutes interviewer, he said, we are the directors, the writers, and the producers of the movie that you call reality. He's like, it's all a stage. He's like,
that's actually pretty profound.
You think?
In that case.
Yeah.
In the case of the exploding pagers.
Yeah.
You know, having worked in operations for quite some time at the CIA through things like, you know, the manhunt for Mireille Malkanzi, who murdered two CIA officers and wounded whatever it was, seven others in front of headquarters, to the hunt for Osama bin Laden or Carlos the Jackal, right? I've been around some pretty creative guys, and they're almost exclusively guys, pretty creative guys. I've never met anybody in my life who could come up with an operation like that. Nobody. Mm-mm. This was genius.
Yeah.
And then the Russians were like, well, so do you think that somebody's going to be prosecuted for this? And I said, on the contrary, somebody's going to get a promotion and a medal and a picture with the director of Mossad. This is like the greatest thing in somebody's career, whoever came up with this.
Right. And what other operations do they have cooking right now?
Seriously, right?
Right. That I mean, are like that or even more impressive.
We've talked about Fauda, the TV show Fauda that streams on Netflix. Yes.
And amazing
that
show.
Shin Bet, which is the domestic counterpart of, it's the FBI of Israel.
Right.
And look at the Hollywood-esque operations that they come up with. So multiply that times 10.
Right.
And then throw in the Iranians and the Houthis and Hezbollah.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible.
What do you make of this stuff that just came out? Trump said that he's going to bomb Moscow for some reason or whatever. Like, he's not getting along with Putin right now.
No.
What is this all
Trump
about?
Trump is just apoplectic that Putin is not doing what he tells him to do.
Mm.
When Trump said during the campaign, I'm going to end this war in 24 hours, he believed that he was going to end the war, not in 24 hours, of course,
right.
But he believed that it was just a question of talking tough and forcing both sides to the table. And I think Trump really believed during the campaign, too, that it was the Ukrainians who were being intransigent. And as it turns out, it's not the Ukrainians being intransigent. It's
what
the Russians.
What does that word?
Intransigent. That they don't want to do as they're told. They don't want to go to the table and give up their liberty and their sovereignty.
Okay.
So he's had several conversations with Putin, and Putin has told him to go fly a kite. And then Putin made a comment the other day, and this is what led to the Trump statement. Putin made a comment that, you know, maybe I'll take all of Ukraine after all. Because the official Russian policy has always been Donetsk and Luhansk, right? The Donbass and Crimea.
Right.
Well, now maybe I'll take the whole damn thing.
And what led him to say that?
I think he's tired of Trump calling him up and yelling at him and saying, settle this thing. He doesn't want to settle it. Yesterday, the White House announced new sanctions on Russia.
I saw that.
Like, what sanctions could possibly be left?
Right. Yeah. And how would that work? Do you think there was something I just read it this morning where there was the drone swarms Russia was sending into Ukraine.
Yeah. On an unprecedented level. Yeah. Hundreds and hundreds of drones. And they're hitting civilian targets too.
Right.
They blew up one of the Ukrainian Orthodox cathedrals yesterday. Like in
can you find that story?
Is it Sumy? I think is the name of the town.
Yeah.
The cathedral's like 800 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They just blew it to bits.
Yeah.
Collapsed the dome.
Yeah. It seemed like it was calming down. And all of a sudden it seems like it's heating back up. And like how would, and he's sending more money to Ukraine now.
Yeah.
And what the fuck is happening?
Well, you know, I think that Putin is making a tactical mistake here too, in that he feels emboldened because he has essentially an unlimited number of North Korean troops. that are being sent to fight.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And the North Koreans fight to the death. They don't want to be taken prisoner. And their bodies are found like with propaganda stuffed in their pockets, that your last sentence has to be to glorify the great leader, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But where I think he's underestimating the effect of the war is that every Russian family has been touched by loss. It's like how during the American Civil War, every American family was touched by loss. A lot of people have died. Like how much longer can you go? There are only so many North Koreans that are going to fight for you.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, you know, this whole generation has been devastated.
Did you see there was, what is this? Oh, CNN, the Russian drones swarm Kiev from all sides, an apparent shift of tactics. Go to the top. Hundreds of Russian drones flying from all directions attacked Kiev. Can you zoom in a little bit? Overnight into Thursday, in an apparent new Russian tactic, making a second consecutive night of ferocious attacks on Ukrainians. At least two people were killed, including a 22-year-old police officer. Wow. Russia launched 400 drones and 18 missiles, including eight ballistic, six cruise missiles, according to Telegram post from Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky.
This just posted.
Wow.
That's
that happened just in the last couple of hours.
That was just posted this morning. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Aren't they conscripting everyone from the prisons in Russia?
Yeah.
They're sending prisoners out there?
Yeah. Right.
So what do they say? They're saying you can be released and go fight and try to survive and try to save your country or you can stay locked up.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's exactly what they're doing.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not a good situation. I actually feel for Trump on this because I believed what he believed.
Yeah.
That there was this issue of saving face, and if both sides could save face, I thought that the Ukrainians would agree to give up the Donbass and Crimea. Well, I mean, they lost Crimea 11 years ago, but just to make it official, all those people that live there are ethnic Russians anyway.
Right.
And then there would be a fast track to European Union membership.
Hmm.
But no, I was wrong.
So I don't understand, like, why, what is getting in the way of this? He's not like, so what does Trump want from Putin that Putin is not willing to work with him on this and making him do stuff like this and send these 400 drones and just like escalate it even more?
He wants that agreement. Yeah. He wants that agreement.
That he won't push past Donbass and Crimea.
Mm-hmm.
And Putin's saying no.
No.
See, that's not what I imagined was going to be. I thought before all this, before Trump got in, I imagined Trump or Putin would be more than willing.
We all did. Yeah. We all did.
And even in the beginning of the war, I think you might have been the person who told me this in like the first year, maybe even exactly 1 year into the war, one of the top military generals, came out and talked about how we had Russia on their heels after this one big battle victory that we had, and that was the time to go to the negotiating table.
Right.
And then the Biden people just said, no, fuck off. We're not
gotta
negotiating.
Keep pushing them. Yeah. No negotiations. That was the Biden position. No right. negotiations.
Yes.
Remember, it was even regime change for a little while.
Yeah.
It's like, and who the fuck are we to decide who's going to lead Russia or any other country?
So, and then do you think what was his, Lindsey Graham came out and said, there's trillions of dollars worth of natural resources and minerals.
Uh-huh. I remember that.
In Ukraine.
Uh-huh. Rare earth metals.
Rare earth metals. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we can't let China get them.
Right. Well, you know, the ugly truth of that is that the Chinese are the only ones willing to take the financial loss of mining and refining the ore. Rare earth metals, of course, are important because they go in everything. Mm-hmm. Everything from, you know, from missile cruise systems to our cell phones to car bumpers. They're in everything.
Yeah.
And we really need them. And most of these rare earth metals are in places like the Democratic Republic of Congo,
Mexico,
Australia, the United States, especially Alaska, under the Salton Sea in California, Afghanistan, and Ukraine. The problem is that you've got to mine like tons and tons and tons of ore to get just a little bit, I mean, of earth to just get a little bit of these rare earth metals. So they're money losers. Well, we don't refine any of it because it's so expensive and you just can't make a profit. Chinese are happy to do it. So almost all the rare earth metals that are mined are processed in China. So here's the United States. We need, let's say, I can't even think of chromium. We need chromium for something. And we don't have chromium. Thanks. We don't have chromium. Mm-hmm. So we buy it from the Chinese. Well, what if we need it for our missile systems? Are the Chinese going to cut us off? Maybe. They haven't in the past because we would treat that as an act of war.
Mm.
And, you know, it's an existential threat. So, I mean, I don't know. Are we willing to take that on? So far, the answer is no. There was one funny thing that happened this week. I don't know if you happen to see it in Politico. The administration wanted to sell like vast swaths of public land out west, right?
You know? Oh, yes.
Did you see this?
Yes, I did see this.
Did you see it was Republican senators who killed it? And did you happen to see why? Because Hakeem Jeffries said, you know what? This is a great idea. Let's sell off all these giant parcels of land because when the Democrats take over again, and we will, he said, we're going to use it to build affordable housing for poor people.
Right.
And they were like, oh, no, nothing's for sale. The whole thing's dead. It's killed.
Well, there was a huge, when they were trying to put that in the bill, there was like, everybody was losing their shit on social media. Like people were doing podcasts about it. People were like, you know, big time like activists and like hunting people were like complaining about it. And they're like, why are you going to do this for Section 8 housing? Like, and it's amazing that they were able to strike it out of the bill.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one of the things that, and was that in the Big Beautiful Bill? What was that?
It was originally supposed to be
about that. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's one of the interesting things that Thomas Massie was explaining to Theo Vaughn in that thing, how they just pack these bills full of so many things.
Do you know why? Because there's a rule in the Senate that you cannot filibuster a budget bill.
What is English?
So, if you sponsor a bill, you're a senator.
Yes.
And you sponsor a bill to make, National Spring Water Day.
Okay. Right?
Maybe I don't want to make a National Spring Water Day. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say, well, I'm going to give a speech. And my speech is going to be unlimited in time because I don't like this spring water idea. So in order to force me to stop talking, you need 60 votes, right? But if there's the federal budget and you put a little amendment, oh, and it's the federal budget, the National Spring Water Bill, you only need 51 votes.
Mm.
Right.
Well, if the federal budget is tied to it.
If the federal budget's tied to it. So there are 53 Republicans and 47 Democrats, and they're so partisan that the votes are going to be 53-47, 52-48. If it's somebody that's really unpopular like Kennedy, it's going to be 50-50, and then Vance breaks the tie 51-50. Mm. So they're not going to pass anything in the Senate. Nothing's getting passed because you need 60 votes.
Right.
Except for the budget. That's why the Big Beautiful Bill had literally everything that Trump wanted. Budget or not budget, or just stuff that he pulled out of the sky.
Wow.
And had them put in one day because he knew that this was his one and only shot to get this stuff passed into law.
And the other thing that he was saying that they do is they'll put things in there like, you know, they'll put something in there, for example, that like the Democratic Party will absolutely never vote for and they don't want. And they'll put also, So like if you're voting against it, they'll put in there like support for homeless veterans.
Yeah.
And they can say, oh, you don't care about homeless veterans.
Exactly. Do you remember the Simpsons movie?
Yeah.
Okay, so remember there's going to be this dome over Springfield?
Yes.
This glass dome?
Yeah.
So Congress takes up the issue of evacuating the citizens of Springfield. So they're in the House of Representatives, and they're debating it, and it's going to be unanimous. They need to save the people of Springfield. And then at the last second, this liberal congressman puts up his hand and says, Mr. Speaker, I would like to attach an amendment to the Save Springfield Act. It is to appropriate $100 million for the perverted arts. And then the speaker says, all those in favor of the Save Springfield Fund the Perverted Arts Bill say aye. All those opposed, no. The bill fails.
That's hilarious. Yeah, that's exactly
what they
do. And they
did that because that's what they do. That's Washington.
Mm-hmm. And they don't even have the time between when they're brought to the floor and when they're supposed to be voted on. There's no time to read all these hundreds of pages of stuff. And let alone for the public to go through it.
The big, beautiful bill was 1,600 pages long.
That's insane.
And the Democrats insisted on the Senate side. They insisted that every word of it be read. Right? It was a stalling tactic.
Okay.
Because usually no bills get read on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
It took 16 hours to read the bill. That's why it was delayed a day on the Senate side. Remember, the House voted and the Senate was supposed to vote the next day. It was 2 days later. But then they also pulled another procedural thing. I have a master's degree in legislative affairs. I love this stuff. What happens usually is the House passes a version and the Senate passes a version, right?
Okay.
But the House, they put, you know, maybe AOC has an amendment and Massey has an amendment and somebody else has an amendment. And then the Senate does it. And then, you know, maybe Murkowski wants to build another bridge to nowhere and Lindsey Graham wants to give money to the homeless veterans or whatever. So the bills aren't the same. They'll vote on it in the House. Let's say it passes. The Senate votes on its own one and it passes. But the bills are different, so they can't go to the president. So they go to something called conference committee. So the Democrats appoint their representatives to the conference committee from the House and from the Senate. The Republicans also do it from the House and from the Senate. They negotiate the differences between the two bills. They come up with one unified bill, and it goes back to the House for them to re-vote and then back to the Senate for them to re-vote. And if the identical bills are then passed, then it goes to the president for his signature.
Mm.
This one was so close and so controversial that the House passed its version, the Senate passed its version, which was different, and then the Speaker of the House said, whatever you guys passed, we'll take it. We don't need to hammer, whatever, just ignore our amendments, we'll just take your amendments.
Why?
Because they were afraid that the likes of Thomas Massie were going to convince just two more people to vote no, and the whole thing would have been dead.
Wow.
Yeah. Right now, because of deaths and retirements, mostly deaths, the Republicans have a majority in the House of 3. And it's the smallest majority in American history. So Massie's a no vote. That only leaves 2 malcontents. If they flip their vote, it's all over.
Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
This whole thing, I mean, the whole congressional bill passing stuff is
our system's
so
broken.
Confusing. It's designed to be confusing.
It is. It is because it forces negotiation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It forces bipartisanship.
Yeah.
Or in the beginning of the Republic, multipartisanship.
Mm.
And now it just pisses people off.
Now that the big, beautiful bill is passed, like, other than the fact that they've like, what are like the biggest things in your mind about that bill? That
huge amounts of money for border protection.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like $15 billion in border protection.
More money than they'll be able to spend, and gigantic increases yet again for the Pentagon. It's crazy.
Yeah, $15 billion for border protection seems insane.
Yeah. What are they gonna do with all that?
Yeah, like how do you?
I mean, like 15? Literally, what are you going to do with all that? I don't know, man.
Yeah, the raise. I mean, like the ice stuff and like the raise. Like that's another thing we haven't even talked about. But that's another thing. Yeah. All of the like the what would you call them? Like the high IQ MAGA people are really, really questioning and pushing back on, like,
right, because like, these guys are wearing masks, they're not wearing uniforms, there's no identification. You don't know if they're ICE or if they're a kidnapper or right. a cartel guy or, you know, some nut who, you know, wants to be a
and
cop.
They're showing up at construction sites and Home Depots and arresting workers,
right,
and handcuffing six-year-olds,
yes,
and not going after like real and criminals and people who are like doing really bad shit.
I know that you didn't intend for this to be the, you know, the Massey Appreciation Society show, but Massey was talking about this on the floor of the House the other day, saying this doesn't make any sense.
No.
If you wanna fulfill your campaign promises, let's grab the murderers and the rapists and the robbers and people who've been convicted of a crime, or even if they've got minor crimes on the record, if they're career criminals,
yeah,
grab those people and send them back to, you know, or right. send them to wherever they came from. You know, there's the situation in Djibouti right now, too. Have you followed this?
I have not.
So we've got 8 guys that we grabbed. Every one of them has been convicted of either murder or armed robbery.
Oh, I did hear about this.
And they're being held at the joint U.S.-Chinese drone base in Djibouti, Camp Le Monnier. I've been there. It's like out of the Twilight Zone. And we're...
Find Djibouti on a map. I need to see it. I can't picture where the hell Djibouti is.
It's a little teeny tiny right in the Horn of Africa.
On the Horn of Africa.
Yeah, just at the top of the Horn. So the Trump administration wants to expel them to South Sudan, hell on earth, literally the poorest and most war-torn country on the planet. None of these guys are from South Sudan. But the Supreme Court said last week, there's Djibouti.
Zoom out. Okay. Yeah, that's where I thought it was.
Yeah.
Right next to Yemen.
Yep, 16 miles right across the Bab al-Mandeb. That's where the Houthis are rocketing ships, right?
Oh, really? Right here. God.
Yep.
So these dudes, where are they originally from?
They're from all over Africa.
They're from all over Africa.
And none of them are from South Sudan.
And who called them, CIA?
No, well, it's unclear, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. Could be CIA, could be FBI.
And we want to take them out of Djibouti and send them to Sudan.
Yeah.
Why? What does it have to do with us?
They're living on the base right now in Djibouti.
Oh, on our base.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we just want to get rid of them. I mean, they'll likely starve to death in 2 or 3 weeks in South Sudan, like everybody else is.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The crazy thing about the ICE stuff is like, so my friend, I have a good friend who has a big concrete construction company. And all his Mexican, like his whole company is Mexicans, basically all the workers, even like the project managers, the supervisors, all the top guys mm-hmm. are Mexicans, and they have like their crews or whatever. And like he knows that they're trying to raid construction sites and stuff. So he's fucking paranoid.
Oh yeah. It'll put him out of business.
One of his guys got pulled over and got popped. One of his big top guys. And then they put him in a holding facility. This dude just had a kid 3 weeks ago. So he's got his like wife who's in her mid 20s and her newborn who like they're some of his coworkers that worked with him at the construction company are like helping her, like giving her money to help like feed the kid or whatever. But the guy's just like, I think he's waiting. I don't know how long he's going to be in this like detention facility right. before they figure out what to do. And I don't know, like, I don't know what his options are. I don't know. Like I heard that you can elect to just be deported.
Yes.
Or you can stay there.
It's called a self-deportation.
Self-deportation. Yeah. But I don't know if he's allowed to take his wife and kids with him or whatever. But so what my buddy did now is he's hired all of his Mexicans to have personal drivers who are legal. So now like if they get pulled over, the cops can't ask for their IDs.
Right.
So like right. he's like protecting himself, but it's crazy. He's paranoid. His head's on a swivel all the time because wow. he's worried about this stuff happening. And these aren't bad guys.
No.
These dudes literally, their biggest concern is can they work Sunday too?
Oh my God.
Like they want to work 8 days a week. Mm-hmm. That's all they care about is fucking working yeah. and like paying for their families or whatever they're doing with their money. But like these guys aren't committing crimes. They aren't freaking kidnapping people. They aren't bad people. And like, there's got to be some sort of like middle ground there where you, if you are my friend who owns that company and you have a bunch of illegals working for you, he's not underpaying them by any means. Like, he would pay them the same price he would pay some white dude, but they work harder.
Yes.
They work more.
Yes.
So like, can't you figure out a way to make those people who own those companies like, well, responsible for them somehow?
You know, in the 6 or 8 months before the 9/11 attacks, the Bush administration had negotiated a deal with the Mexican government to change the status of undocumented workers in the United States, Mexican workers specifically, mm-hmm. where they would be given 9-month work visas. They would have to pay federal income taxes. At the end of the 9-month visa, they would go back to Mexico for 3 months and reapply for the following year.
Mm-hmm.
So they could work 9 months a year in the United States and then Mexico 3 months. The only reason why that wasn't ratified was that 9/11 hit and it went out the window. But
oh,
that was
shit.
The closest that we've ever come to solving this problem.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That, and that's another thing, like the taxes.
And it's not amnesty because there's no path to citizenship.
Mm.
You want to work picking vegetables? God bless.
There's no path.
Americans don't want no path.
Right.
You have to go back. But if the idea is, and I agree with you 1,000%, these guys will work harder than any American we've ever met
yeah.
to support their family, in many cases, extended families back home.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll take whatever opportunity they mm-hmm. can get. If they can be legalized like this, so they don't have to constantly look over their shoulders, it's better for all of us.
Mm. So is it, and I don't know how it works, but if you do own a company and you are paying a bunch of illegal guys to work,
do
you pay them under the table?
In most cases,
you can't you can't write them. They can't get a W-2,
They don't have, they don't have W-9s.
So
they don't
no
have
taxes.
Social security numbers.
Right.
Right. So everybody's in trouble.
Right. Everybody's in trouble. Right. Yeah, there's got to be some sort of loophole where, like, you can, if they are illegal, you could figure out a way to take to tax them and give them some sort of, like, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Because you need that labor.
Definitely, we need it.
And it's not incentivized for people. People aren't going to college to work construction. They aren't going to college to learn. Ask any young guy. They don't want to learn trade work.
No.
You know?
You know, if you look at things like chicken and pork processing plants, no Americans work there. That is really hard work. Mm. And they're all Latin Americans. Go to any restaurant in New York. None of the kitchen workers are Americans.
Right.
Maybe the chef is.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody else, for whatever reason, they tend to be Ecuadorian.
Mm.
I mean, the whole country's economy is going to just grind to a halt.
Yeah. Is ICE raiding Nobu in Los Angeles?
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Oh God, it's craziness, man. We're living in the twilight zone, Mr. Kariyaku.
Man, I'm not liking it very much.